Manchukuo into another undisguised Japanese colony, such as Korea or Taiwan, and should instead make Manchukuo a new model Asian nation. In his recognition that Manchukuo would serve as a logistical base for war against the Soviet Union and even against the United States and England, Ishiwara was, however, admirably realistic. He believed that Japan was now the only Asian nation capable of fighting the coming war against the West, or, as he called it, the final war, and that the other countries had the duty to cooperate with Japan to secure their own liberation from the West. No other officer in the Imperial Army at that time had Ishiwara's profound interest in logistics combined with his great erudition. Most other Japanese officers dismissed logistics as an effeminate discipline, believing instead that the proper way for His Majesty's warriors was to fight with bold self-abandonment, no matter how ill-equipped they might be. That true martial glory lay in conquering a mighty foe when outnumbered and poorly armed. Strike the enemy and advance, too swiftly for supplies to keep up. That was the path of honor. To Yoshitaka Wataya, the complete technocrat, this was utter nonsense. Starting a long-term war without logistical backing was tantamount to suicide, in his view. The Soviets had vastly expanded and modernized their military capability through Stalin's 5-year plan of intensive economic development. The 5 bloody years of the First World War had destroyed the old world's values, and mechanized war had revolutionized European thinking with regard to strategy and logistics. Having been stationed for 2 years in Berlin, Yoshitaka Wataya felt the truth of this in every bone of his body. But the mentality of the greater part of Japan's military men had not outgrown the intoxication of their victory in the Russo-Japanese War nearly 30 years before. Yoshitaka Wataya went home to Japan a devoted admirer of Ishiwara's arguments, his worldview, and the charismatic personality of the man himself, and their close relationship lasted many years. He often went to visit Ishiwara, even after the distinguished officer had been brought back from Manchuria to take command of the isolated fortress in Maizuru. Yoshitaka Wataya's precise and meticulous report on sheep farming and wool processing in Manchukuo was submitted to headquarters shortly after he returned to Japan, and it received high praise. With Japan's painful defeat in the 1939 Battle of Nomonhan, however, and the strengthening of U.S. and British economic sanctions, the military began to shift its attention southward, and the activities of the research team waging hypothetical war against the Soviet Union were allowed to peter out. Of course, one factor behind the decision to finish off the Battle of Nomonhan quickly in early autumn and not allow it to develop into a full-scale war was the research team's conclusive report that we are unable to wage a winter campaign against the Soviet Army given our current state of preparedness. As soon as the autumn winds began to blow, Imperial headquarters, in a move unusual for the normally face-obsessed Japanese army, washed its hands of the fighting and, through diplomatic negotiations, ceded the barren Hulunbuir steppe to Outer Mongolian and Soviet troops. In a footnote, the author pointed out that Yoshitaka Wataya had been banned from holding public office by MacArthur's occupation after the war, and for a time had lived in seclusion in his native Niigata. But he had been persuaded by the Conservative Party to run for office after the ban was lifted, and served 2 terms in the upper house before transferring to the lower house. A calligraphic scroll of Kanji Ishiwara's hung on the wall of his office. I had no idea what kind of Diet member Noboru Wataya's uncle had been, or what he had accomplished as a politician. He did serve as a cabinet minister once, and he seems to have been highly influential with the people of his district, but he never became a leader in national politics. Now his political constituency had been inherited by his nephew, Noboru Wataya. I put the book away, and folding my arms behind my head, stared out the window in the vague direction of the front gate. Soon the gate would open inwards and the Mercedes-Benz would appear, with Cinnamon at the wheel. He would be bringing another client. These clients and I were linked by the mark on my cheek. Cinnamon's grandfather, Nutmeg's father, and I were also linked by the mark on my cheek. Cinnamon's grandfather and Lieutenant Mamiya were linked by the city of Xinjing. Lieutenant Mamiya and the clairvoyant Mr. Honda were linked by their special duties on the Manchurian-Mongolian border, and Kumiko and I had been introduced to Mr. Honda by Noboru Wataya's family. Lieutenant Mamiya and I were linked by our experiences in our respective wells, his in Mongolia, mine on the property where I was now sitting. Also on this property had once lived an army officer who had commanded troops in China. All of these were linked, as in a circle, at the center of which stood pre-war Manchuria, continental East Asia, and the short war of 1939 in Nomonhan. But why Kumiko and I should have been drawn into this historical chain of cause and effect, I could not comprehend.